Hello, and welcome to Front Page Radio with your host, international journalist Dan Wooding, the founder of Assist Ministries and the Assist News Service. Dan has been a journalist covering the world for more than 41 years now with a focus on missions. And now here's Dan Wooding with today's guest.
Hi there. I'd like to welcome you to a very special program today with a fellow Brit, all the way from Bournemouth, England. He's now living in the United States, and he has a very inspiring story of how he came to seek his fame and fortune and finished up homeless and now runs New Mexico's biggest homeless center. So, Jeremy Reynolds, thank you so much for being on the program.
Dan, it's so good to be back on again. Last time we taped this, it was in a hotel room in Albuquerque when you came to one of our last events.
Yes, that was a long time ago. Well, tell us a little bit, Jeremy, about, first of all, Bournemouth. What sort of place is that?
It's been many years, Dan, but I grew up in Bournemouth. I was born in Bath, not in the Bath, but born in Bath, England, I guess the home of the Roman Bath.
Yes.
And grew up there. Rather, grew up in Bournemouth and close to the beach. But you know what? I never went to the beach.
Yeah.
I just worked and read. I didn't have a very happy childhood at all. Wasn't happy with myself. And looking for friends, looking for happiness. Went away to private school in England. In fact, the school where the Beatles' former manager, Brian Epstein, went was the school I spent many, many years.
What was the name of the school?
It was called Claysmore School in Dorset.
Yes, yeah.
And I understand that's where he went. He did commit suicide sometime after that, but so we shouldn't go there, maybe. But I was a very unhappy young man, didn't have any friends, and I said, grew up in Bournemouth. Told my mother, in probably not in the best British form, I was going to quit that school for the last 2 years of high school. Went to a technical college in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Got my then A-levels. I don't think they have A-levels in England anymore, do they?
No, that was when you were coming to the end of your time at school, you would sort of graduate with different O levels, ordinary level, and advanced level. No, they don't have that now, right. I don't think.
Because that dates me a little bit, doesn't it? And was very unhappy. Went to a tech college to finish off my high school, and was invited to a church in England. Went because I was after the young lady that invited me, and committed my life to Jesus in January of 1976. Then, much to my mother's horror, because she was a beautiful, upright English woman who figured she was a Christian because she baked apple pie and was British. I told her I was going, and I said, God has called me to emigrate to the United States. And she said, well, if he's called you to go to the colonies, you've made your bed, so lie in it.
Yeah. Well, how did that call come about then?
I just had an intense longing to come over here. I was going to go to Bible school. That didn't work out.
Yeah.
And so I felt I was supposed to come over here. My minister back then in England laughed at me and said, well, he said, American people talk a lot, and you don't talk much. You're sort of shy. And so he said, I don't think you'll make it.
Yeah.
And so I sort of talked to folks at church, and they laughed at me. But then I went to get some help from a guy in London, not some help in terms of monetary help, but some counsel from a guy who said, you know, if you believe God has told you to go to America, quit talking about it, but just do it. So I went back home to my mother in England. Got back home on the train that day from London, you know, to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
She said, did this guy talk some sense into you? He said, no, if you say God told you to go to America, go.
Yeah.
At that point, Dan, a transformation happened to me, an inward transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 days later, I had the I was given $200 for the airfare by somebody who did not profess to know Jesus. A week and 2 days later, I had the offer.
How did that happen? Did somebody just stop you in the streets or what?
I was at church, and I mentioned I was going to America. They said, you have all the money you need. I said, no, I have nothing. They said, how much do you need?
Yeah.
They gave me the money for a standby airfare. And I came, and a week and 2 days later, I had an offer of a place to stay.
And where did you go, first of all?
I went to a charismatic pastor in Orlando, Florida,
uh-huh.
called his house up out of the blue, and a friend to come and stay at her friend's house.
Wow.
And ended up with some crazy holy rollers
for
that summer of 1978, going around all of the states, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, in tent revival meetings.
Huh.
Real lesson to me, Dan, because many English people come over to the States In fact, one I heard, I've said it was the best thing about America was the boat back to England. Very rural, but typically British.
Yeah.
And but being there and not having anything for that summer, just having a chance to worship the Lord, to share the gospel on the streets, just gave me a real insight into America. I fell in love with America. And that was the beginning of my sort of ministry here in the United States back in 1978.
Ah, wow. Now, what was the story of you finishing up somehow in New Mexico and becoming homeless?
Well, you know, I had a call on my life to ministry. And as many people do, just like when David was called to be king, there was a waiting period.
Mm-hmm.
God called him to be king, but it wasn't right then. God had called me to ministry, but I jumped the gun. So I'm not going to work to support my ex-wife and kids. I'm going to be in ministry.
Yeah.
Well, the proof of a call to ministry will be provided by people who support you or not.
Yes.
They didn't support me. I said, I'm not working.
Yeah.
So I ended up homeless.
Huh.
We were couch surfing and couch hopping. Of course, something that had a huge impact on me was when some friends in Titusville, Florida, told my ex-wife and kids, well, we'll look after her and the kids.
Yeah.
But you, Jeremy, you can just go and do whatever.
Huh.
So I took off on the bus as far as my few pennies would allow me to go. Ended up homeless in Dallas, started hitchhiking. I was scared stiff.
Yeah.
Picture this upright, proper British young man. Had everything I needed. I mean, I really had to live the spoiled British life.
Yeah.
Everything I needed. The end of January 1982, I was on the New Mexico-Texas border, and I was homeless, and I had no money. Just there was a hotel just opposite me. I relate this in my latest book. It was like the hotel sign says, and maybe $15 for a room. I had maybe 12 in my pocket.
Oh, dear.
So I grabbed some paper, laid down on the dirt, on the grass. I rolled everyone to a rock, was very, very miserable. Called the church. First church was in the phone book. They said, oh, yeah, come and sit on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I went, how far are you? 5 miles. Well, Dan, it was like 5 miles. It was a very kind offer from that minister.
Yeah.
But it was like 5 miles, could have been 500 miles.
Yeah.
And God uses everything if we let him.
Yes.
And that was one of the instigating or initiating moments that made me know with Joy Junction in Albuquerque is 5 miles out of town. So we have a pretty comprehensive transportation service for those that need a place to stay. Because literally, 5 miles could break your emotional spirit.
Yes, yeah. Wow. So here you are, you're homeless, you're sleeping on the floor in Albuquerque. Was this a turning point that made you realize this is something I've got to do? There are so many other people like me who, you know, you're not trying to live off the state or anything. You've just hit the hard time. What was it that finally led you to start this rescue mission?
Well, I ended up in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and people have to read my book if they want to know more.
Which is, what's it called?
Homeless in the City, Part 2.
Okay.
And they can go to the website also. And that tells the whole story. And then I ended up, I said, there and was welcomed or helped by a gentleman formerly in Full Gospel Businessmen's.
Yeah.
And he helped me. He gave me a job. He owns a lot of units, you know, flats, apartments.
Yeah.
And he asked me to help him paint, and that was a bad idea because I painted more of me than I did, you know, the apartments. And we had lunch with him a few months ago, and he is still helping us.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be in ministry, and one day my former minister up there, we were walking around town, and Lower Alafria, we saw this old store. And it had like old newsprint stuffed through the plexiglass windows. And so I started off a coffee house, his place coffee house, in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And funny thing is, Dan, for 2 days a week, it was an illegal bar for illegal aliens.
Uh-huh.
And I was told to turn the guy in. I said, no, God will take care of us.
Yeah.
And he did. His business went down and ours increased.
Huh.
So very quickly we got the use of the entire store.
Yeah.
I took 4 days off in 4 years,
very
tired, made the mistake of telling God, don't tell God, you ask him stuff.
Yeah.
I would never start anything like that again. Got 2 front teeth punched out by a drunk.
Oh, dear.
And took 3 months off, and God renewed my calling to work with the homeless again in late 1986.
Yeah.
We moved on to the acreage we've been at ever since, and we began this ministry. It was about July, August, 86.
And where did the name come from, Joy Junction?
Well, looking back, I'm not really sure, but I believe it's, you know, the homeless are at a critical junction in their lives,
right.
And really they need joy.
Yes.
So joy junction, hopefully joy at the junction.
Yeah.
And since then, Dan, it's been amazing. We have like 45 on staff now. We have a mobile wagon, which goes out around the streets feeding as many as 6,000 meals a month.
Yes.
We feed 10,000, as many as 10,000 meals a month at Joy Junction and shelter as many as 300 people every night.
Wow. Now, we have with us for the interview two of the young ladies that work with you. One of them is Diana and the other is Kathy. And maybe we'll start with Diana because she's like us, an immigrant. She's, I believe, from Peru. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to get involved with Joy Junction?
Oh, my story is really short. I came to Albuquerque. Well, I went to Albuquerque for college. And I met Jeremy and Kathy in one of these chamber events. Our local Chamber of Commerce, this party called La Noche Encantada, and by fortune they sit next to me, and we would just start to talk, and Kathy invited me to volunteer with them. I start volunteering with them, and then I enjoy really much this job, and I just start to work with them.
So the sort of work you do, you go out with the food wagon, is it, or what do you do?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. We call a street outreach. We go around the city with this mobile feeding truck, and we try to feed homeless as much as we can.
Don't you find that a little bit scary?
Well, yeah, like we talked before, it's, initially it was a little bit of scary, but until you get used to them, and they get used to you, and then we feel like we know them.
Yes, yes.
So.
Now, you're sitting next to Kathy, and if Kathy could come close. Kathy, you are working with Jeremy at the Joy Junction. Tell us a little bit about what it's like when you go out. I mean, when you take the food wagon with you, do you meet for prayer beforehand, or do you ask for God's protection, or what happens?
We absolutely ask for God's protection. I think that we do it individually mostly. As Diana mentioned, there have been times where we have felt fear, especially in the beginning, not being sure what to expect going out in the streets. We have encountered a couple of situations, and by the grace of God, everyone came out safe.
Tell us what happened, maybe one of these situations. What happened?
There are two that really stick out in my mind, but one, I think the biggest one for me, is we go to this local grocery store in a very drug-infested part of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah.
And after having been going there for a few months, we had built rapport with a few of the women in charge, if you will, of the street in that area. And we were out there with what we call the Lifeline of Hope. That's our mobile feeding unit. And I had turned around slightly to hand someone a dish of food when I noticed a girl running very fast in my direction. I was scared. I wasn't sure why she was coming in my direction or what her intents were.
Yes. Yeah.
But these women who are in charge, if you will, in that area quickly sheltered me from her and didn't allow her to come any closer, and quickly informed her that, you know, her behavior would not be allowed, because we had informed them that if this sort of thing were to continue, we couldn't continue to put ourselves in danger coming out there. So that stands out for me the most.
And when you go out there, do you actually make friends with these with the homeless people?
Absolutely. There's one woman who I won't name, but she has mental issues. There have been, I think, at least two different times that I can think of that she thought she had given birth to twins that had died. And in actuality, that story was her sister's story. Yes. We think she may be pregnant now, but we're not sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, every time she sees me, she runs toward me with open arms, tears in her eyes. So yeah, we've made friends out there. I've encountered a couple, actually, last couple times that we were out. A couple of women who have been in and out of jail.
Yeah.
And when they see me and they're back out, you know, they tell me their story. And so, yeah, we build friendships and we build rapport, which will hopefully in turn then allow us to show them that there are better ways out there.
Mm. What are some of the main reasons, particularly why women live out on the street?
Right now what we're seeing a lot of is abuse, physical abuse at home, mm-hmm. that kind of leaves these women with no other alternative but to be on the streets. And then they fall into, you know, the use of drugs and prostitution. We're also seeing young girls who are encountering domestic violence issues with their parents and not necessarily uh-huh. a spouse or boyfriend,
yeah.
who don't feel like they have anywhere else to go and find themselves on the streets and prone to using drugs and falling into prostitution. And it's sad, but it's out there.
And do you get the problem of human trafficking there in Albuquerque?
You know, I haven't experienced anyone who has experienced it firsthand. I have seen literature throughout the city about human trafficking and bringing the attention and light to that subject, but I haven't personally seen it on the streets.
Well, we're speaking with Jeremy and two of his wonderful workers here. Jeremy, why should people care about the homeless?
You know, Dan, we have a biblical obligation to care for the homeless. I mean, you know, it seems like, you know, I'm an evangelical, for want of any other word, even though there's many people that conjures up like a lot of bad things, you know,
yeah.
conjures up judgments and just nasty things as to what you shouldn't do, as opposed to the freedom and liberation that the relationship with Jesus Christ gives us.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes people will say, well, Dan's homeless, he's a drunk, he made his bed, lay in it.
Yeah.
The question to me no longer is, Dan's homeless. The question to me is, Dan, why is Dan homeless? Why is Dan drinking? Well, maybe Dan drank to got through the hell that was his life,
mm-hmm.
because maybe you have been raped or abused as a child. Maybe awful things have happened to you.
Yes.
Nobody told you about the love of Jesus. You heard about the judgment and condemnation of God.
Yeah.
And so to get through maybe sleeping in a bug-infested tent, cave, alley, you just drink to block everything out.
Yes, yeah.
So, but what Jesus wants us to do, I believe he obligates us to do this,
yeah.
is to share the liberating news of the gospel, which is the good news, not the judgment, but the good news of the freeing power of the gospel of Jesus Christ,
yeah.
to say, hey, you know what? You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
We understand that you're hurting, but the good news is, the solace and the comfort that you were looking for in the heroin, in the crack pipe, in the meth, in the bottle, can be found in Jesus.
Mm.
And I believe Jesus not just wants us to do it, he commands us to do that. So many times we can say, I'm a Christian, I committed my life to Jesus, well, good for you. What are you doing with that good news he has given to you?
Mm.
It's like, you know, there was a store that used to run the blue light special, right?
Yeah.
Well, people would go around and say, have you seen the blue light? What about if you kept it to yourself?
Yeah.
Or if we see a sale, if we see something that is really important to us, we want yeah. to share it. Yeah. I mean, the new in vogue phrase is, it's going viral, right?
Yeah.
Well, Christians need to go viral with the love of Jesus Christ and to say, his news or the good news of the gospel of Jesus has impacted me in such a manner, I just can't stop sharing it with you. I'm not going to preach at you. I'm not going to talk necessarily.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk down to you. But my way of showing is to say, hey, Dan, you see that guy over there? How about if we buy him a burger?
Yeah.
Well, that's like helping him continue in his lifestyle of being totally dependent.
Yes.
Well, really? Well, why don't you give him a burger and let God take care of the rest? It might be the bridge to a relationship which would allow a chink into his life that would allow you to share the gospel with him.
Sure. Is there one particular story you'd like to relate that's really affected you with it in this ministry?
You know, I've seen so many, Dan, over the years. I think really like a variety of stories is like when people, I'll sometimes be at a low spot.
Yes.
And I'll meet people, it could be in the store, on the streets, all over the place. And people will go, hey, do you remember back in whatever year, you really helped me? I stayed at Joy Junction,
yeah.
and you helped me get back on my feet. So not one particular story, but seeing, in fact, there was one. Got an email a few weeks ago, making a liar of myself, an email from somebody who said she stayed with us, I believe, 19 years ago when she was like 9.
Huh.
She now lives in Pinellas Park, Florida. And she said, I just wanted to let you know, I stayed there with my mom and my dad. They gave you a hard time. I wanted to let you know what an impact you had on my life.
Yeah.
She went to a Christian camp. The only time she got away in her life to camp,
yeah.
she said that really made a huge impact on her life. And she wanted me to know all these years later, she hadn't forgotten.
Huh. Wow. Is it dangerous sometimes there? Have you been attacked at all?
I was attacked in my first ministry when I got two front teeth punched out by a drunk.
Oh, dear.
I told him something, and he said, I'm going to wipe the dust off my shoes, and went, poof, like, yeah. And, but you know what? I guess I'm now at the age now where I figure I don't want to put myself or any of my crew in any untoward danger.
Yes.
But I just figure that, you know, a time will come when God decides to take us. As long as we take all reasonable measures to protect ourselves,
yeah,
and God will take care of the rest. If he doesn't, we need to be ready to go home with him.
So what happens? Somebody turns up at Joy Junction. You give them emergency shelter, but do you have a training program for them?
Absolutely. We call it the Christ in Power program.
Uh-huh.
We have four ways you can stay at Joy Junction. One, actually, sort of five. One, before staying at Joy Junction, is the Lifeline of Hope.
Yeah.
That's what we're attempting to build, that bridge, to build that relationship that will cause somebody to want to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Then like a 30 to 60 day time where people go out and look for a job, that they come in every day, they check out. Then we have a 6 month life recovery program.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads into a 1 to 2 year transitional housing stay.
Okay. Wow.
And we have about 75 on our SIP program, the Christ in Power program.
Yeah.
And basically it's a Jesus-ized version of AA.
Yeah.
Myself and Cassie are actively looking for ways to expand that program also to make it even more effective for our many guests than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's here at the AGRM convention here, we've also learned many things. We went yesterday, you know, to a seminar where we just learned many innovative ideas. We can almost, some of them, we
yes.
can put into effect the minute we get back to Albuquerque.
Tell me about your staff. We've got these two lovely ladies. Tell us a little bit about them and then some of the other people who work with you.
Oh, let me give Kathy that one for the staff.
Kathy, just tell us a little bit about your own story.
Okay, a little bit of my own story. I've often been asked what it was that... they called me to this ministry and to do this kind of work. And in all honesty, I moved to Albuquerque from Texas. Didn't have to work for a little while, and then noticed things with the economy taking a plunge, and felt like I needed to start doing something so I could take care of myself and my son. And I noticed that Joy Junction had placed an ad in the newspaper. Had never done work of this nature, but thought, what's the worst? You know, I don't get a call back. Luckily enough, I did. I interviewed, I got the job, and it has made such a profound impact.
In what way?
Oh, goodness. A couple. I think I don't see the homeless population the way that I used to. I actually see them now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we walk past them sometimes and we don't realize that they're there. And if we do, we choose not to acknowledge them.
Yeah.
And I'm avid now in asking people that they take just 1 second and just make eye contact, say hello, nod your head if you're afraid to talk to a homeless person, but acknowledge them. That's what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So many people just walk past them. And I think also I was struggling with my own religion.
Mm-hmm.
And this has kind of brought me back to that. So it's been enlightening for me on a few different fronts.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And what difference has it made to you?
Since I've been working with Joy Junction, definitely like know more about homeless.
Yes.
And recognize that they are just like me.
Yeah.
I think that's the most amazing part of this job.
That's wonderful. Jeremy, people listening to this, they maybe, you know, they've hit hard times. They're not quite sure what the next step is. Maybe there's a mother being beaten up by her husband or whatever. What would you like to say to someone who is really on the edge of going out and becoming homeless because of circumstances beyond their control?
That's an awesome thing to think about, Dan. One thing to any mothers, to any women that are listening to this, that have been physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally abused, it is not God's plan for you to take that.
Yeah.
Jesus came to earth not to put women in bondage, but to liberate women. Unfortunately, there are some ministers, pastors, priests, whatever, in a church power position,
mm-hmm.
that say, well, God's just going to take care of it. Well, yeah, sort of, but you might end up dead first.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a church like that, leave it.
Yeah.
And if any man in your life is abusing you, leave him and run to a safe place. I mean, obviously, if you're in imminent physical danger, call 911.
Yeah.
And also you can call your local rescue mission. I mean, one of the reasons we're in San Diego this week, we belong to a wonderful national group called the Association of Gospel Rescue Missions.
Yeah.
If something's not in imminent danger, but you think maybe you're going to leave your, to lose your house, you could go to the AGRM website, agrm.org, and I believe there is a link to your local rescue mission online where they can put you in contact with people that can help you. And they'll also share with you other resources you can get, you know, to encourage you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. Could you have ever dreamed, Jeremy, when you arrived in Florida and became a holy roller, that you would eventually finish up running this rescue mission in Albuquerque?
No, every day, Dan, it scares the heck out of me. I mean, it really does. We have a $2.5 million budget, more or less, each year. We have 45 on staff, as many as 300 homeless people every day.
Yeah.
And we have to have a lot of resources coming in every day to make sure we have the ability to go on going on.
Wonderful. Well, we've been speaking with Jeremy Reynolds and
Cassie Sotelo and Diana Otiniano.
See, I'm not very good at Spanish names, but we want to thank all of you for being on the program. And again, it's joyjunction.org. Jeremy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jen.
You have been listening to Front Page Radio with international journalist Dan Wooding. If you would like a free subscription to the Assist News Service, log on to assistnews.net. And if you would like to write to Dan, send an email to assistnews@aol.com. Tune in again for another edition of Front Page Radio on this same station.